Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 89 of the Uncovered podcast. My electricity has clearly gone once again, so I am over here in the dark. Lucky enough, we still have internet.
Oh my God.
But anyway, you guys are with me, Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And with me is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And yeah, where to start? Lots has happened off the field as well. Jared, let's kick it off with Josh Hazlewood's comments after, you know, England were... Oh, there we have it. We've got the electricity back. But once England were in that situation after losing to Australia where they could potentially get knocked out on net run rate, Josh Hazlewood said that it would be in the interest of both Australia and the rest of the teams to knock England out over here. He didn't say that Australia will throw the game away, but there were like hints of Australia versus the West Indies in the 99 World Cup, right? Where Australia deliberately played slow in an attempt to knock New Zealand out. So we've seen this movie before. What did you think of it?
I think that if you... design a World Cup in this kind of way, where the games aren't all played at the same time at the end, you do kind of put yourself in a position where it's easier to manipulate. So I'm more on that side. Someone, I saw a TikTok or maybe it was a comment on Twitter about someone who'd looked it up and said it was against the playing conditions to be able to do that. Okay. It's a hard thing to prove. It wasn't hard with Michael Bevan and Steve Waugh. It was quite obvious with Michael Bevan and Steve Waugh. But yeah, it can be a hard thing to prove if they had gone ahead with it. If you want to win the World Cup, though, you want to knock out as many teams that are potentially going to win it as possible. Scotland was not going to win the World Cup. Not that they couldn't have won a game in the next round, but they were not going to win the World Cup. If I was playing, I would want to do that. But I would be checking the playing conditions very, very carefully beforehand. There was a great TikTok about this. Oh, my God. I meant to make a video about this. It was so funny. Brad Haddon. This is when Australians are so ridiculous, right? We are such a ridiculous culture because we say things so definitively and they don't make any sense. So I think it's the Willow Talk podcast. I've never listened to the podcast. I've only seen the TikToks, but the guy who hosts it gets on, you know, Dan Christian and other really interesting cricketers, and Brad Haddon's on it quite a bit as well. He says to Brad Haddon, you know, do you think the Australians were serious? Could they do that? And Brad Haddon goes, nah, Australian cricket, that's not how we think. We would never do that. And the co-host is like, yeah, except that time we did it, right? And it just shows you how ridiculous it all is. I think the truth is it was probably more of a passing comment by Josh Hazlewood. But the thinking behind it is the way that Australians would think about that. I've played in club cricket in Australia. I know teams who've done stuff like that before and you know, gerrymandered results and all sorts of things to be able to screw over other sides. So Australians do it and have done it at a World Cup before and will probably do it again. I don't know how you regulate against it would be my question going ahead. I think that would be the tricky one. But in this case, I think Australia just went, it's not an important game. We're going to rest our players. We'll see how we go. And they won the game and it didn't matter. I think if they'd dropped six catches and lost that game, though, people would have gone absolutely ballistic. So that would have been, would have been worth it.
English
for the
media would have gone crazy.
Piers Morgan, could you imagine? Piers Morgan would have had to that TV channel that was cancelled. He would have had to re-up the TV channel with his own budget just to get on people to yell out again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at that point when they did drop six catches, I'm not going to lie, I might have even thought about it, right? My mind would have gone there. But then, you know, when that game unfolded the way it did, clearly Australia were out there to win. It would have made for some great television, though, had they lost that one. One thing I want to pick your brain on with respect to this, what do you think should happen in this sort of scenario? Like, I saw a bunch of posts by Crick Info, which was saying that Mitch Marsh could cop a potential fine, 50 to 100% match fee, but he could not be suspended for any games. That's apparently, you know, part of the laws or whatever. What was this all about? And what should be the, you know, way to deal with this sort of stuff?
The best way to deal with it is the way the Football World Cup works, where the final round of all the group games is played at the exact same time. So it's much harder to manipulate any of this stuff. I don't think that would have helped in this case, though, weirdly. Oh, well, it would have helped if it was a net run rate game. But it wouldn't have helped if it was just points, I suppose. Australia could have still played off a little bit if they wanted to. I think Australia had qualified for the finals. They're more than welcome to put out a B-grade team if they want and, you know, not tire out any of their players. So that's okay. But losing on purpose to knock out another side isn't. I don't know how you regulate against that correctly, if we're being honest. And then you have to decide if Australia were doing it on purpose or, as you said, if Australia had lost that game, we know so many people would have said that they were trying to lose that game. They won it with two balls to spare. They clearly weren't trying to lose it, but they did almost lose it, right? So they could have easily lost to Scotland and made it look like they were trying. And it would have looked like at times they were trying and at times they weren't. And so that they threw that game. How do you regulate that? I don't really understand. I mean, we can't regulate match fixing for the same thing. You know, if a player plays a really bad innings, we don't fine him for match fixing. We have to prove it, right? That's a very hard thing to do within that change room.
Yeah. And I mean, it obviously didn't happen. But even if you have all the games, the final round games on the same day, same time, all of that stuff, right? You can't stop Australia from fielding a weaker team.
That's what I mean. Right? But the points thing is a bit different. I think if it was just net run rate, that's a tougher thing to manipulate. What, you know, you're playing one game and you're trying to manipulate net run rate in another game. A little bit tougher, but not impossible, right? And you can certainly, you could certainly, I believe, still do it, but it makes it a lot tougher to do. How you regulate against it, I don't know. It feels icky if a team does it, but it also feels icky if you claim a team did it and they're just like, no, we just played crap.
We would have, opened the Spirit of Cricket cauldron once again had this happened. But luckily for everyone, you know, and the sake of our mental health, we did not have to go there. Anyway, on to the next topic. There have been some announcements, some retirements. David Wiese of Namibia has called time on his international cricket career. He's represented both South Africa and Namibia. And he's had success, a lot of success in Namibia, actually, in one of those T20 World Cups as well. I believe it was the 2021 version of it, where they got to the next round and did extremely well. And he's been one hell of a cricketer, you know, an all-rounder supreme, can hit an extremely long ball. And he was very accurate with his line and length as well. Was bowling crucial overs, not just for Namibia, but also for the franchises that he played in. And you recently spoke to him as well. So talk to me about the man and how much international cricket is going to miss him.
Do you know what? How many international games do you think he played?
I mean, if we count both South Africa and Namibia, are we looking at maybe like 100, 110?
So 60.
Really? That less for Namibia.
So it was, he played 9 ODIs for Namibia and 6 ODIs for South Africa. And why can't I find the T20s? And then in T20s, he played 20 for South Africa and 34 for Namibia. And here's my point. Oh my God, you've lost your line again. And here's my point on that, right? He was given a real send-off by the fans at the ground and also by the English players specifically. And I don't think there are that many players who play 60 internationals who would get that kind of respect. I don't pretend to know David Wiese particularly well. You know, we probably spent about an hour chatting that day, you know, 40 minutes on the podcast, 20 minutes here and there. But it was clear from that he's a really intelligent and a really nice person. But also, I know a lot of people who know him and they just respect him on such a high level. And I think that's what we really saw out there. And it's fascinating to see a player who didn't play that much international cricket, but is so widely respected as a professional. And that's what he's respected as, someone who tries really hard, who's worked on his game. And I think we saw that. And there was a part of me that was like, this is actually really quite nice that a Namibian player who played not that much for South Africa has been given this kind of reception in his last game, despite having not played that much international cricket. But I really think that says more about the person than the cricketer. He was a full-hearted cricketer. You know, you look at that grip, and even my son was watching going, why is he holding the bat like that? And I said, because he bashes it, mate. And that's how axe men hold an axe. You know, there's something kind of cool about the way he played. And I loved his career. Even before he came back to Namibia, I loved watching the way he played his cricket. So, glad, you know, he obviously went out the way he wanted to, whacked a couple of sixes, eventually holed out on the leg side or wherever it was, and off he was. That's the way he went. He bowled pretty well in that game. He was actually probably the best player in that game, by the way. It's just that Namibia lost.
Yeah, well, unfortunate for Namibia. But I mean, just on Wiese, like having observed him from up close, you know, in Pakistan, he's an absolute legend in Lahore. They worship that guy. You know, the Qalandar's fans call themselves his disciples, right? That's how they view David Wiesa. And he's just one of those cricketers who commands that respect. He's been an absolute gent on and off the field. And he has that presence on a cricketing field that if David Wiesa is around, you haven't won this game yet. It's still on. And he's a towering figure, someone who left it all out on the field. You could tell that his commitment levels were really, really high up. And we're talking about a guy who also played till, you know, his late 30s as an all-rounder. And he could still pack a punch till just recently, like his last game. So I'm going to miss him. I hope he continues to play for the Qalandars for a bit because I really enjoy watching David Wiesa play. And that hair, he's got a haircut now, but that hair is just some of the... I'm now thinking why we didn't have him in our haircuts, Crick Picks.
I think I think he'll be a coach. That hair. And I think he'll play a little bit longer and then we'll start to look into coaching opportunities. That's just my guess. That's not based on any conversations I have with him, but just he kind of feels like a coach to me. And he'll be naturally respected by people all around the world.
Yeah. I can totally see him coaching the Lahore Qalandars, and I feel like they will activate that clause because they love him over there. Anyway, it's not a retirement per se, but Trent Bolt has also mentioned that he will not be playing another T20 World Cup for New Zealand. Unfortunate for him because he's been brilliant in these games and has ended up on the losing side.
Have you seen their bowling economy rates, by the way, in this tournament? It's ridiculous. Like, no one's gone at like over 4.5 and over outside of Ish Sodhi, I think, and that part-timers.
Yeah, I mean... It's crazy how, like, they were out after 75 overs of cricket, right? That was New Zealand's tournament. But yeah, Trent Bolt, an absolute master of the new ball, still, you know, kills it day in, day out in franchise leagues. He doesn't play all too frequently for New Zealand anymore, but he always is a part of the squad and the playing 11 whenever there is a major ICC event. He's made it very clear that this is it for him in T20 International World Cups. Not per se... T20 international cricket, but I think it means one of the same
thing. Yeah, I thought that was a bit weird too. I wasn't quite sure what he meant by that. Yeah. I don't think we're going to see him play for New Zealand all that much in the future. He will make himself available for the odd test match by the sounds of things. If he's not playing in the next T20 World Cup, I don't think he's playing in the next ODI World Cup. So the white ball, Trent Bolt at World Cups is probably over. And how many times will they pick him for test matches? So he hasn't, as you said, announced his retirement, but he's making it quite kind of tricky for New Zealand to keep picking him.
I mean, we'll miss all of those new ball wickets. And very recently, I feel we talked about all format cricketers, the best ones around, and we ruled him out just because we don't know what his status is. But he is, you know, an elite cricketer, probably the best New Zealand have had since Hadley in terms of seamers. I'd even go that far. And his career will be remembered. And I hope that we keep... continuing to see him in franchise leagues across the world. So, go well in retirement, David Wiesa, and go do you, Trent Bolt. We're here.
Sybrand Engelbrecht.
Anyway, on that
Sybrand Engelbrecht also announced his retirement from the Netherlands, didn't he? Yeah, so I think that one just came in maybe a couple of hours ago, so you might have missed that one. I think I'm right. I think I saw that headline. So, you know, we're seeing a couple of those, you know, associate players calling it quits on that. And it's a real shame. I thought he played brilliant cricket at times in this tournament. And obviously, he's one of the best fielders in the world as well. So it's a real shame that he's leaving.
Yeah. He took a terrific catch at the Bangladesh game. He had a pretty decent ODI World Cup. I didn't know he was that old, but it's sad. I liked
him. Yeah, yeah. I thought he batted really well for them in this tournament. And as you said, he was good in the last one. But I would say as well, it was probably a professional thing that he's making that decision.
Yeah. Anyway, that wraps up retirements. We'll be taking a short break on Uncovered. You are with Bairam and Jared. And stay tuned for some more off-the-field discourse after this short ad.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
Hello and welcome back to Uncovered. You guys are with Bairam and Jared. And another thing that we need to talk about on this show is that Sid Monga piece on the Lauderhill facilities.
I haven't read that one. Sorry, I must have missed that one.
Oh, I'll give you a quick briefer on it then. So in those two washed out games, after the Sri Lanka one, because during the Sri Lanka game, it was raining. But in the USA versus Ireland and India versus Canada game, they were... a combined 30 minutes of serious rain across both those fixtures. Yet we did not have a single ball, you know, that was played. And apparently one side of the ground had really poor drainage, so that was an issue. But then there were some inexcusable things which the ICC, I believe, needs to be held accountable for as well, in terms of the Super Sopper breaking down on Friday and then going for repairs and then coming back. And then you might have noticed this, but there were not enough covers available. They only had enough covers to, you know, cover the surface and the run-ups. Mm. And this is on the ICC because Florida is Hurricane Central. We know that. There needs to be no cricket for us to know that, right? That's common knowledge. And I mean, these are the bare minimum things you can do. I'm not saying that Ireland and Pakistan got knocked out because of the rain. They got knocked out because of their poor cricket. But in an ICC event, these things kind of need to be sorted and taken care of.
Yeah, it doesn't sound ideal. I think the ICC don't put enough emphasis on cricket. And that's the sort of thing that you hear former players say, and they don't know a lot about it. But I can promise you that when it comes down to it, I don't think they actually try and get the cricket right enough. And too many of the people involved with it don't care all that much about cricket. And I have passed information on to the ICC before that I think they need to know. And they have basically got back to me with, you know, variations of, that's for cricket nerds. No, it's not. That's how the pitch is going to be prepared. That's why the ball was changed and you didn't notice it. That's why we're going to have a problem with the LBW loophole and the zombie ball runouts and all these different things. That's cricket. You actually need to get the cricket right. And, you know, too often in this World Cup, they have shown that they are not up to the job to get the cricket right. And it's quite poor of them to be in that situation. Two of the three USA grounds they had key issues with, right? And that's on them.
And only Dallas was good. And you can probably give credit to the MLC for that because, you know, they had that entire tournament and it was a success. And, you know, it was the best surface in the USA by a mile. The New York stuff, okay, fine. We did an entire podcast on it. It was like Frankenstein's monster or whatever. Florida, not so much. You can expect rain in Florida. You should have an extra super sopper. You know, should have enough covers to cover the entire ground. Sri Lanka plays international cricket. You should learn a thing or two from them. So these are really glaring errors. And I mean, they won't be able, like no one can even hold them accountable for this sort of stuff, which kind of hurts me. And I mean, not only was it a disadvantage for Pakistan and Ireland, but also the USA and India. The USA could have gotten another game in. Yeah. Sure, they got that point and qualified. But India had, you know, a break of momentum. And that's not ideal for them. So overall, quite a big shit show, you know, in the USA. And I mean, for all the exciting games that we've had from an organization point of view and an administration point of view, I don't think the ICC was up to par. But yes, that is pretty much it, Jared. That wraps up our itinerary for Uncovered. Let's move to the Super Chats. Sheraton KD says, P-Dog said, Josh said that to put pressure on England to push their net run rate even more, it's all mind games. I mean, maybe he did mean it. Who knows?
So I respect Pasana a lot, but do we really think England needed more pressure to score quicker in that sort of situation? Like, it's England. They were going to go whack the ball anyway against these sides. Mm-hmm. Like, of all the teams, that is absolutely pointless. And secondly, not having a go at Josh Hazlewood, I think he's a really good cricketer and a smart person, but he's not Ashwin, right? He's not a 5D chess master. I think he just thought, yeah, maybe we will. Maybe we'll have a look at that if it comes to a position where we can knock out a team that might be able to win the World Cup instead of us. I can't see any situation where they would be like, if we say this, England's going to bat so quick. Yeah, it's England, guys. They're going to bat so quick anyway. The pressure side of it isn't going to change anything to them.
Sheraton, like, if it were mind games, it would make more sense if they were yet to play Australia. Oh, sorry, England. That's where mind games come in. Not when you've already when played that team.
Oman. You know, I find that improbable. I think, if anything, Josh Hazel would probably take the piss a little bit, right? And he's like, yeah, we'll think about it, right? We'll have a go. Just because it's the funny way of going about that answer, as much as anything. I think that's the more likely thing. I did see Mitch Stark go, you took him, you guys blew it up in the media. Well, no, he said it. Like, he could have said no. He could have said no, but he's going to play cricket, right? He said it. Don't suddenly blame the media for reporting what your player said. But I think that, again, tells you it was probably just Josh mucking around a little bit.
I mean, you say that sort of stuff, and of course it becomes a headline, especially when England do have one of, you know, that sort of media which pounces on these sort of things. Also, coming to the final super chat of this episode of Uncovered, we've got Path Right Winger again. He says, Eid Mubarak, guys. Eid Mubarak to you as well. I see a lot of cool new Lankan and Pakistani talent, but not a lot of Kiwi talent. Can we bet on a Lanka-esque downfall for New Zealand cricket? I don't know, man. For New Zealand, you always get these primed cricketers who are 32 years old, have lots of miles under their belt, and they're ready to hit the international circuit. You don't really get that with Pakistan and Sri Lanka all that too often. I would much rather have the seasoned professional.
I think the big issue with New Zealand going forward is bowlers. You know, Jameson isn't going to be fit. There's a lot of other guys that I don't think are particularly world-class that they've been trying out. I think there's some real issues with their bowling coming through. Young spinners and bowlers. If you think about their batting, and I don't know if Path means in all forms of cricket, but I think he kind of does. But, you know, Devon Conway's going to stick around for a couple of years, right? Because it's taken him forever to get there. Blundell and...
As is Darren
Blundell
Mitchell.
And Mitchell, again, took a long time. I don't expect any of those guys to retire quickly unless their bodies disappear. Ravindra Phillips. Chapman's been on the verge for a really long time. You know, Alan Seifert, you know, there are players out there that are there and thereabouts, not to mention Will Young?
Bracewell's
another one who's waited forever to break through. And some of these guys are only 28, 29, 30 as well. I've got no issue there, but the more I watch them bowl, the more I'm like, how are they ever going to get anyone out once Wagner's already gone, Bolt's pretty much gone. Jameson almost never plays, and Southie's got to be on the last gasps at this point. I really worry about that, but the batting I don't worry about as much. But I don't know. I don't know what that next generation becomes, because sometimes you have that generation that wait forever, and then when they finally get their go, you go, oh, that's why they were waiting. They weren't quite good enough to push the other guys out. And sometimes they break through, and you're just like, oh, God, they should have been playing for years, these guys.
Yeah, and that's happened with a fair few New Zealand players, right? Whenever they come onto the scene, you're like, where was this guy? But they are experiencing a bit of a dark moment, but that happens when golden generations are on the wane. It's a very cyclical thing, Path, and New Zealand have a sporting culture in that country. Like, there are so many rugby rejects that go on and play cricket. Kyle Jameson is one of those guys, right?
I don't know if he's a rugby reject, but so, he was certainly, like, he's a late bloomer, certainly a late bowler. He was supposed to be a batter when he was younger, right? So, I think there is a professional element to their sport. I think Bayram's right.
Absolutely. Like, Pakistan and Sri Lanka don't have that. It's cricket or bust.
And what's interesting about that is, you know, Pakistan and Sri Lanka did have money in the game early on, whereas it's not. I think Ross Taylor, the first year he was supposed to play first-class cricket, was the year that the players went on strike. As Ian O'Brien says, I'm not sure you can call it a strike because no one was getting paid, but they went on strike from domestic cricket because they weren't getting paid to play domestic cricket, right? So that's within our short-term memory, that sort of thing. So New Zealand went from really amateur and then have put this really good professional structure around. But, you know, at a certain point, especially if you want to win make finals of World Cups and semifinals of World Cups and win test matches, you need to take wickets. And I don't see a great lineup coming through at the moment. But they still have Matt Henry. Lockie Ferguson's still going to play for them in domestic cricket. In T20 cricket and white ball cricket. They're not completely bereft, but a couple of years ago, they looked like they had one of the best wall piles. I don't know what I'm trying to say there, but they had bowlers and now they don't.
Yeah. And I mean, I would trust New Zealand to continue to produce cricketers. They'll get another bowler at some point because they have that professional setup and a sporting culture. You look at any sport, New Zealand are there and thereabouts. New Zealand, Australia, they'll always have a team. Regardless of how good that team is, they will have that team. They've made it to football World Cups, for crying out loud. But anyway, that wraps up this episode of Uncovered. Thank you to everyone who joined us in the comment section, and thank you for all your super chats. Just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co, bookmark that webpage, and that can prove to be your one-stop shop to all of the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. Thanks once again for turning up. We'll be back with another episode of Uncovered next week. That's all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku, as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.